Welcome to your KMUD local news. I'm your host, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. We'll start off with the rundown of today's top stories, followed by reporting from our news team. Tonight, we'll have in-depth coverage on last night's primary debate for California's next governor and an update on the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors' Measure Z spending. But first, the rundown. This is KMUD News. Starting off, we have national news on moving cannabis from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 substance under the DEA Controlled Substances Schedule. President Trump's Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche signed an order on Thursday moving marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. This had previously been set in motion by President Trump's executive order in December declaring the same. The administration also made moves to speed up the regulatory process, setting hearings on the issue for June. Todd Blanche said in a statement that he was, quote, delivering on President Trump's promise to expand Americans' access to medical treatment options. This rescheduling allows for research on the safety and efficacy of the substance, ultimately providing patients with better care and doctors with more reliable information. In theory, the order legitimizes medical marijuana programs that are active across 40 states, including California. It also sets up a system for state-licensed growers and distributors to register directly with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. The move to Schedule 3 also gives licensees more tax deduction opportunities at the federal level. Critics of rescheduling frequently cite the issue as a tax break for large cannabis companies. We'll continue to provide coverage as marijuana's move to Schedule 3 continues. Next, we have audio from Representative Jared Huffman, was responding to U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins and her announcement that a Southern California water municipality wants to buy the Potter Valley project.
Hi, folks. There's some breaking news in California we all should be paying attention to. The Trump team just admitted they are plotting a massive water grab. They are pushing a scheme to force PG&E to sell its water rights and infrastructure on the Eel River in my district to a Southern California water district that wants more water supply. Now, Trump sees this as a way to troll liberals in Northern California like me and Governor Gavin Newsom. His Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, just admitted the scheme, and the Southern California Water District has confirmed it as well. So this is not okay. Trump's water grab would hurt tribes, farmers, and communities up and down the North Coast and in the North Bay. It would blow up a carefully negotiated two-basin solution that is on the verge of restoring the Eel River while protecting our water supplies and actually securing local ownership of the water right on the Eel River for the first time in a century. Trump has shown us time and again that he has no idea how our water system works. And we all remember him talking about opening a magic spigot from the Northwest that was supposed to deliver water to put out the Los Angeles fires. We remember the ridiculous photo op where he dumped a bunch of water from a federal reservoir into a dry lake bed and swore that it was going to Los Angeles. Protecting our precious water supplies is more important than ever. And water managers in my district have negotiated a careful deal to do that while restoring the Eel River. The last thing we need is more boneheaded decisions by Donald Trump and his cronies that only benefit their MAGA friends and special interests. We need to stop this madness right now. That starts with understanding exactly who is behind this water scheme, everyone who's involved, and also the full scope of their scheme and who is paying for it. I want you to know that I'm starting an investigation to get all of these answers. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that not one drop of our North Coast water is sold off and shipped to Southern California.
We'll keep you posted as Representative Huffman's efforts to prevent the sale continue. Lastly, there's now a $1,000 reward being offered for the whereabouts of a Florida man who went missing in Trinity County on April 9th. Robert Jameson, 45 years old, at 5'10" tall, and described as last wearing a dark tan coat, light tan pants, a black shirt, orange and white New Balance shoes, and a black Rooster Bar baseball cap. Jameson's family wrote on a fundraising page supporting the search, stating, "Robert is a father to a young son and a caring man who has always been there for his family, especially his mom, which makes this even more concerning. He and his mom share a home and support each other, with Robert covering the vast majority of the household expenses. His sudden disappearance has left us extremely worried and fearing the worst. We are determined to get answers, no matter how long it takes. Those with information about this case can contact the Trinity County Sheriff's Office at 530-623-8126 or text the tip line at 615-574-3836. Next, to in-depth reporting from our news team. We'll start off with highlights and analysis from last night's primary debate for California's next governor. This is KMUD News. Last night's debate between the six major candidates for California's next governor was lively, mostly civil, and delivered stark contrasts between governing approaches. There were four Democrats and two Republican candidates, all of whom will be on the primary ballot for the primary election on June 2nd, with mail-in ballots set to go out next month. There are many more candidates on the ballot to choose from, but none of them polled high enough to make the debate stage. Candidates included were Democrats Tom Steyer, Matt Mahan, Javier Becerra, and Katie Porter, along with two Republicans, Chad Bianco and Steve Hilton. It is estimated that up to a quarter of voters are still undecided based on recent polling. We've decided to air highlights and analysis on three main issues that were discussed: fuel prices, the homelessness issue, and the cost of housing, to help our listeners be better informed before the election. We begin with the issue of fuel costs, where candidates were asked if they would eliminate California's high gas tax, starting with Tom Steyer, who suggests taxing oil companies directly.
The answer on this is not to give up the gas tax, but actually to have a windfall profit tax on the oil companies who have been ripping us off for decades. That's on the books. We can activate it right away. We can get the money, and we should send it directly back to California citizens.
Representative Katie Porter responded by making points about environmental health risks and moving away from fossil fuels and the gas tax to more progressive options.
I'm a single mom of three. I push a shopping cart and I fill up my minivan, which has nearly 180,000 miles on it. I absolutely feel these pressures, and I think we need to do something about it. But I also want to be clear, 82% of Californians don't breathe clean air today. And when we look at what that's costing our healthcare system, what that's costing people, we have to continue to make investments in having the cleanest fuel that we possibly can. So I absolutely think we ought to be thinking about how to move away from fossil fuels, and that means moving away from a gas tax and replacing that with the general fund taxes.
San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan suggested getting rid of the gas tax entirely.
I'm the only candidate on this stage who has called for suspending the gas tax and reforming it so it no longer is the most regressive tax in California that's putting an undue burden on working families.
Former U.S. Health Secretary Javier Becerra leaned on his experience but did not indicate a specific plan for fuel costs.
We need to bring down those prices, but we have to do it the right way. I'll make sure as governor I tackle these crises, because I've been through these crises before and had to handle them. We need someone with experience, someone who doesn't need on-the-job training the moment they get into the governor's office.
Sheriff Chad Bianco blamed state policies for high prices.
We only have the highest gas price in the country because of Democrat policies that are absolutely destroying the oil industry, the automobile industry, and forcing those prices up, forcing our refineries out of the state, forcing our oil companies from drilling in our state. When you send oil, make it into gasoline and send it to across state lines, and it miraculously becomes $2 cheaper, you know that your state is the problem.
Steve Hilton said the answer to high gas prices is more in-state oil production.
The first point is that to open up California oil production doesn't need the legislature because it's through executive action. The way that they've been closing it down is through an agency of the executive branch called CalGEM, the California Department of Geologic and Energy Management. I would replace the people in there and give them a clear instruction to issue permits to our oil industry to produce oil here in California so we can cut gas prices for California families and businesses.
Thank you.
The next issue we'll cover is homelessness, starting off with Katie Porter, who says the cost of housing is to blame.
Our homelessness problem is a direct correlate of our housing problems. We're not going to solve homelessness without bringing down the cost of housing. That's why housing has been my number one issue since the day I launched this race over a year ago.
Matt Mahan leaned on his experiences as San Jose's mayor to discuss the homeless issue.
We were spending $1 million a door and taking years to build alternatives to the streets. Instead, we built basic, dignified shelter, invested in prevention, and when shelter was available, we required that people come indoors. We've reduced unsheltered homelessness in San Jose by nearly one-third over the last 4 years.
Javier Becerra told voters he'll keep them housed.
But what I will tell you is my principal job as governor, and I'm glad to hear other people are saying this, is I'm going to keep you housed. If you are in a home right now, renting or owning, if you lose your job unexpectedly or you have a medical emergency and now you're about to become homeless as a result of that now unaffordable expense, tell me what you need. How can I help you keep your home? Because it costs me so much more money to pick you off the streets, provide you with the assistance in the shelter than it does to keep you in the home that you're already paying for. Mr.
Chad Bianco blamed nonprofits and NGOs for much of California's homeless crisis.
Every single bit of the money going to nonprofits and NGOs for homeless ends the day I take over. And a small portion of that will go to the funding of the drug and alcohol treatment centers that they need, the mental health treatment centers that they need, and then more importantly, the combination of drug and alcohol.
Steve Hilton emphasized involuntary drug treatment as a solution to alleviate homelessness.
My plan is a common sense three-point plan. Number one, it is illegal to live and camp on the streets. We need to enforce the law. Number two, we need to get people into the drug treatment that they need, and it cannot be a choice. Number three, we need to get people the mental health care that they need instead of the barbaric situation we have right now in California as a result of these Democrat policies.
Katie Porter had a feisty response to Mr. Hilton's remarks.
If you were in my class, Mr. Hilton, you would learn in my bankruptcy and consumer protection class that the majority of homeless people in California are actually working.
Tom Steyer emphasized a need for emergency housing options for homeless people.
That's why I'm in favor of emergency interim housing. Getting people into one room with a key, shared laundry and food. You don't have to be clean, and you can bring your animal. We need to get people off the street. And let's remember this. We want our cities to be walkable and safe. We want kids to be safe walking down the street.
Next, to the general issue of affordable housing. Starting off with Matt Mahan discussing his progress on the issue as San Jose's mayor.
In San Jose, we were approving thousands of housing units, 20,000 housing units over the last 7 years or so that weren't getting built. I led us through a process of looking at the data and recognizing that we in government are often in the way. We did hard things. We sped up permitting. We've used new technology to make it easier to apply. And most importantly, we reduced one-time fees that look good on paper, but we're blocking the very thing we need, housing and opportunity for people.
Javier Becerra emphasized helping California residents move from being renters to homeowners.
We want to make sure that we help those who want to buy a house get in a house. Most Californians who are renting are essentially paying a monthly mortgage, except it's called rent. I would convert them into homeowners by helping them with their down payment. We have down payment assistance programs where we will expand the opportunity for a renter to become a homeowner. And the next thing I will do is in the first 100 days, I will make sure that we get all those projects that are essentially shovel ready, ready to go. And there are some 40,000 housing units that are shovel ready.
Chad Bianco emphasized deregulating the building industry as a solution to the housing issue.
problem. The problem is California state government. California state government created this housing problem. It is not that we can't afford a house. It's that builders can't afford to build a house because of the over excessive regulations on our building industry, along with every other business and industry in California. On day one, I remove all of those regulations from our building industry that will allow more, as much as a third, sometimes more depending on location, to a third of the price of a home to be removed off of that $900,000 price tag.
Steve Hilton laid out points, including being anti-union, to ease housing costs.
Number one, we have to end this outrageous hidden tax on housing. They call it impact fees. It can add up to 20%. To the cost of a home. Secondly, we have to reduce the extreme environmental regulations that make it three or four times as expensive to build the exact same home in California as in neighboring states. Number three, we have to end the exploitative union lawsuits that are filed to block housing, that extract project labor agreements that make the cost so much higher. And number four, we have to end the war on single-family homes so that we can build the housing we need for young families. We need more starter homes in California.
Tom Steyer emphasized reworking regulations and lowering building costs.
Look, the biggest problem in California is that Californians can't afford to live here, and the number one problem there is housing. And I've seen people who have full-time jobs who are still having to live in their car. But if we're going to solve the housing problem, and I've said we'll build 1 million units, it's not a silver bullet the way some of these people are suggesting. It's silver buckshot. Yes, we have to shorten permitting and make it less expensive. We made a first step on it last year. We'll make more. Two, we have to redo zoning so that we build denser and around public transportation. Three, we need to actually drop the cost per square foot of building. There are ways to do it. Industrial construction away from site and then putting it together on the site drops the cost per square foot by a third.
Lastly, Katie Porter emphasized going after predatory lenders, her experience in housing policies, and the speed of construction as solutions to the housing affordability issue.
Housing is personal to me. I've sat across from thousands of Californians who are facing eviction or foreclosure. When I served the state of California for 3 years under then Attorney General, now former Vice President Kamala Harris, and I held the big banks feet to the fire for predatory lending. I've also questioned CEOs of big banks about how the huge slice that housing takes out of their paycheck. Housing has been my number one issue since I launched this race, and I have the deepest background in housing policy of any candidate on this stage. The key is to build faster. If we built at the same speed in California as states like Colorado, we could take 10 or 20% off the cost of housing.
These were just some of the highlights from last night's debate. The full debate is available from multiple outlets on YouTube. We'll keep you updated as the governor's race continues. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm April Lewis. Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors has approved Measure Z spending, but there is a debate over the fairness of the process. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors has made its picks for the coming year's round of Measure Z funding. At its April 21st meeting, supervisors debated how to spend $1.65 million of Measure Z public safety tax revenue that's available for what's referred to in a written staff report as one-time funding. Most of the $13 million of Measure Z allocated for the coming fiscal year is for sustaining previously funded public safety services. The most debate on the one-time funding was over a $230,000 allocation to the Fortuna Police Department's Eel River Valley School Resource Officer, which was weighed against a similar funding request from the Arcata Police Department. Arcata is in Board Chair Mike Wilson's district, and he questioned why the city's request didn't get similar ranking.
I would kind of put the Arcata program as the Mad River Juvenile Diversion Program, you know, Valley, Mad River Valley, because it includes Blue Lake and other areas. So it's not just jurisdictional. I mean, there's a lot of kids that come in from all over to our, there's a whole crew of them take a bus down from Willow Creek every day. So, and some of those actually do and have taken advantage of the program. And so I see, you know, pretty similar request in scale and scope. And so I'm just kind of wondering why there wasn't some sort of resource sharing in this, or why were there, you know, and is there such a fundamental difference between these two programs and the youth that they serve and that the way they serve them, that this would be so, you know, stark in the choice that was made here?
The picks are based on priority recommendations from the Measure Z Citizens Advisory Committee, and its makeup came under discussion. Wilson noted what he called a geographic weight tilting toward the Eel River Valley among members of the committee, and he said he's getting, quote, some feedback from my constituents that this seems a little unfair. Earlier, Supervisor Steve Madrone had alluded to how he's, quote, struggled with the idea of how almost everybody on the committee has a serious, at least appearance, of a conflict of interest. The committee is chaired by Tammy Trent, a Fortuna City Council member, and also includes Sue Long, the city's former mayor. During a public comment period, Southern Humboldt resident Thomas Mulder took issue with some of the commentary.
It's pretty much a slap in their face to go against their funding. So, you know, I'd say ask the vice chair and chair of that Measure D committee to stand up to the podium and just take your hand and smack them across the face. That would be my interpretation of wanting to pick apart what you appoint them to do. If you want to rake over the coals of what they do because you didn't get enough money in your district, you know, just get rid of it and just deal with it at the Board of Supervisors level. I think it's disrespectful to people that do things for the county at a volunteer level or a level that doesn't provide compensation for their loss of work or the loss of fuel that they're getting there to even go down that route. So it shows true character, in my opinion, of the type of person that's sitting on the board to go there.
Mulder's face-slapping references prompted Wilson to declare, quote, threats of violence are not something we encourage here. The committee's reasoning on the Fortuna and Arcata proposals was explained by Dylan Fierabend, its vice chair.
The committee has had a policy, especially given the lack of increasing revenue, to not fund any new positions. Of course, we would love to be able to fund more positions. We know it's a very worthy cause. Most of them are. But given the fact that we didn't want to fund new positions and the fact that Arcata does at least have one currently, even though it may not be ideal, they do have something in place.
Ultimately, supervisors unanimously voted to approve the one-time funding allocations for the Fortuna School Resource Officer, the North Coast Rape Crisis Team, a Fortuna officer on the Humboldt County Drug Task Force, and Kamau Medical Center's ambulance service for Eastern Humboldt County. The largest amount from the one-time funding pool is $1 million to the county's Fire Chiefs Association. An additional spending item, $20,000 for the Boys and Girls Club's Teen Court Diversion Program, was also approved. The money for that will come out of the county budget's reserve fund. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Metz.
Next, we have Gabriel Zucker with a report on suspected gang activity involving a juvenile in Eureka.
On April 22nd, at 7 p.m., the Eureka Police Department, or EPD, responded to a call about a reported firearm threat. After suspects were located, one was identified as 18-year-old Freddy Alvarez. The other was a 17-year-old male. The firearm was detected, but it turned out to be a BB gun. Alvarez was taken to custody for conspiracy to commit a crime and participating in street gang activity. The juvenile was taken into custody for the same crimes, but also for brandishing a BB gun and violating his probation terms. KMUD talked with Corey Cernich, the detective sergeant for the EPD. He explained the course of events.
So our officers were dispatched to the area of West Henderson and Albee Streets for a report of a disturbance that involved two suspects who had implied that they were in possession of a firearm, and they confronted two other people. During the confrontation, one of the subjects grabbed his waistband to kind of indicate that he was armed with some type of firearm, making some veiled threats about using that firearm. After the altercation, the two suspects left the area. That's when our officers responded shortly thereafter and located the suspects walking nearby. Both of the suspects were cooperative. They were detained by the officers when they arrived. There was no incident in detaining them. The officers did recover a replica firearm in the form of what turned out to be a BB gun that was on one of the suspects.
Cernich also explained the reason behind the participating in criminal street gang activity charge.
During the investigation, we developed information that, based on some of the things that were said during the initial confrontation, may have been related to some potential gang activity. When we investigated that, we learned additional information that the individuals involved were likely associated with criminal street gang that we've identified, and that part of that altercation was the result of their involvement in that criminal street gang.
Anyone with information related to this incident is encouraged to contact Detective Bailey with the Criminal Investigation Unit at 707-441-4033. This is Gabriel Zucker with KMUD.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Gabriel Zucker. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connections that these tribes have to the region. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.